We've had it once, and we're going to have it again. I work in training, as you know, and the moral of training is tell them, and then tell them again. If you tell them three times, people tend to remember it. I think it's probably more in teaching, isn't it? But, yeah. When Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed their sick. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food." Jesus replied, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." "We have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish," they answered. "Bring them here to me," he said. And he directed the people to sit down on the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and he broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, besides women and children. I think God's got great timing. About 2 months ago, I was approached at work by one of the managers. And the manager, it does go somewhere, this story, honestly. The manager was in charge of what we call our respite homes, intermediate care. And what we do in Rochdale, we send folk that we're not sure whether they can manage independently or not, what sort of housing they actually need, to an intermediate care centre. And that care centre has a look at what they can do and what they can't, and then tries to put things in place so they can either go home, some of them might need residential care or whatever. And that's what this home does. And this manager felt that they'd lost something in the areas of dignity and compassion. He said that he didn't feel that they were showing compassion anymore. Now, I went to see him, because that's what I do, to say, well, why not? What's the problem? And he said, well, they're not treating people the way that I would want them to be treated. I always tell my staff that if they've got somebody in, they should treat that person as though they're the nearest relative that they really care for. That's the sort of attitude they should have to them. And they should have compassion. And I remember saying to him, well, what does compassion mean to you? What does it actually mean? And he said, well, it means looking after people. And I wasn't quite comfortable with that, so I looked it up. And it doesn't mean looking after people at all. Compassion, the com is the same as in communicate, so it's being with somebody. And the passion, well, we all know what passion is. It's having that real enthusiasm. So it's having enthusiasm to be with someone and to put yourself in their place and feel how they feel. We sometimes call it, the nearest word probably is empathy, to be in somebody's shoes. And that's what Jesus felt for the crowd. He felt compassion for them. It's a shame, really, that we couldn't read a little bit, the passage a little bit before, because the passage before would tell us about the execution of John the Baptist. John the Baptist was Jesus' cousin, so he'd just heard that his cousin had been executed. Now, if you'd heard that your cousin had just been executed, you would probably want to go to a solitary place and be with God and pray about what's happened. And that's what Jesus wanted, because Jesus was human as well as divine. And he wanted to go to a solitary place. And that's what he did. So Jesus was actually being fed by being with God. And this must have felt a bit like a disturbance for him. Have you ever gone somewhere wanting to be alone and people have followed you? And you've thought, oh dear, it's not what I want. I just wanted to be on my own. Yes, Alison's saying yes all the time. But yeah, and you have to make that decision, don't you? Do I get really naughty and go, just leave me alone? Or do I show some compassion and talk to them and be patient and kind? All those fruits of the Spirit that we find really hard to use sometimes. The shortest verse in the Bible, you probably know, is Jesus wept. And yet those two words show the humanity of Jesus, that he was human and also divine. He was acquainted with grief. But even in the midst of his own sorrow, even in the midst of sorrow about his cousin's awful death, he showed compassion for the crowd. There's a concept at the moment around, it's been around for years, I think, and I use it as well, so I'm not being critical. As I've said before, when people speak, they very often speak to themselves as much as to other people. But the concept is me time. Have you ever heard of it? Me time. And I hear it all the time at work, people saying, well, this weekend, I've told the family that I don't want to talk to them, I'm not going anywhere, I'm not doing anything, because I need some me time. And we accept it, and we think, well, yeah, people should all have me time. It's only right that they do. But there's a balance in that, isn't there? Because all our time is given to us by God. Every minute, every second is a gift from God. So whilst, yes, we need time for ourselves to be with God, I don't think that's what people often refer to when they talk about me time. Often people refer to a time when I can just forget about God. And I can forget about my friends and my family, and I can just have pure me time. And it can be a worrying concept, depending how we see it. So as the day wore on for them, it was clear to the disciples that the people were hungry and they'd better go and get something to eat. I don't think they had a Tesco Direct at the top of the road, so it was a case of trying to work it out. I was actually thinking about church when I wrote this bit, and I was thinking, I know what we'd have done at Roman Road. I know exactly what we'd have done at Roman Road. We would have formed a committee. We would have formed a let's feed the 5,000. And it wasn't 5,000, by the way. It was 5,000 men, and there was women and children. But in those days, they didn't count the women and children. They just counted the men. I'm glad we don't do that in IM churches today. That affect the statistics, wouldn't it? We would have formed a committee and said, right, we've got to do this. How are we going to do it? Well, Lila can do the toast, and Sylvia can do the washing up, and Dorothy can go down to Tesco and get the shopping in. And that's what we'd have done. But they didn't have time to do that, and they couldn't do it. Jesus fed the people. And very often when we read the story, we think about our stomachs, don't we? We think about their stomachs being fed, the bread and the wine. But if you look at what Jesus did, he went around and he healed them as well. He fed their minds by his teaching. He fed their souls by dealing with the guilt and the shame which were ruining their lives. And he fed their spirits by taking away the fear of the future that they all came with. And that's why they came to Jesus. He fed their morale by befriending the lepers, the tax gatherers, the outcasts. Everyone else had shunned them, and yet Jesus fed them by accepting them. Jesus still does that. He still feeds our bodies and minds and souls. He feeds everything we need at the deepest level that we've got, if we'll eat, if we'll allow ourselves to be fed. And there's a line that says, they all ate and were satisfied. I was thinking about that song, I Ain't Got No Satisfaction. Is it Elvis Presley? I can never remember who sang it. Rolling Stones, thank you, Philip. You're of an age, you see, that you can remember these things, thank you. But isn't that true in our society today? I ain't got no satisfaction. There's lots of people that I meet in the work that I do, and no matter where they are, they're not quite satisfied. It was Euro Millions, it seems, on Friday, and there was a rollover, and the whole of our row of people put £2 in, apart from me, because I don't like doing it. And they were all talking about how great their lives would be if they won this Euro Millions, 50-something million it was, and how they'd share it out and what they'd do with it, and they could leave work, and they'd all be really happy, and they'd be satisfied, and everything would be great. And it probably wouldn't be, would it? Because it's not quite that simple. Lots of money might make some things easier, but will it satisfy us? We've got Sky Telly and four-wheel drive cars. We've got iPhones. We go on exotic holidays. I don't know if you do, but some people do. And yet, if you talk to people, they're absolutely stressed to the eyeballs. People are full of stress and don't know what to do with it. And I think we're getting more stressed. I think society's getting more and more stressed. Consumerist society can feed the body, but it doesn't touch the mind, and it totally rejects the soul. So the places that God can get to don't even get touched by consumerist society these days. Only Jesus can feed us at the deepest level. When he healed the 5,000, he was himself grieving. He'd got real deep needs at that point, and yet he put those to one side to do what God wanted him to do. How often do we do that? How often do we put our own personal feelings and lives to one side to meet the needs of others? And how often do we say, I just can't get involved at the moment. I've got far too much going on in my life, and therefore I'll have to sort it all out. Maybe 10, 20 years down the line when things have changed, I might be able to do a bit more, but at the moment, too busy, can't do it. In church, God feeds us with the company of other believers. They're all around you. You can see them. We all know the picture of the burning coal that falls out of the fire. And when it falls out of the fire, it goes cold again. I put it back in the fire and it joins with the other coals and starts to burn brightly. And that's what church should be about. Sharing together and burning brightly together. Church is a relational thing. I was looking on the internet and it said that church shouldn't be like going. I like this picture, you see. Church shouldn't be like going to the cinema to see a film. And yet for some people it is. You go along and you sit in the pews and you watch the film, which is me. Not a very good film today, but you watch the film, which is today. And then at the end of it, you go away. And you might talk about the film or you might not. But you've been to see the film and you go away and that's it. And church should not be like that. It was saying that in Ulster, the Presbyterian churches aren't called churches. They call themselves meeting houses. And they say it's a place to meet with God and it's a place to meet with each other. So it's that sharing place to be together and then go out spiritually filled to share during the week. People are coming to Roman Road to be fed on God's word, but they're also being brought to Roman Road to be fed by each other. One of the things that we can do is get to know each other. Stop talking to the people that we always talk to while we have a cup of tea or coffee after the service or whatever, and talk to somebody that you've not talked to. Talk to somebody that you don't really know very much about and ask them about their lives. And it'll be awkward at first. It'll be really awkward at first. But the next time you do it, it'll be a lot easier. And that's the way that we'll get to know each other. Jesus feeds us at every level. He feeds us body, mind, soul, and he feeds us a way that the world with its empty consumerism cannot. I want you more than gold or silver, only you can satisfy. You alone are the real joy giver and the apple of my eye. We sing that quite regularly. Some people that I've talked to say, well, did the miracles really happen? Was it something that was real, or is it just a story? Is it just something that we told about? We're going to watch a clip. That's me. That's me. Point for Elizabeth to find the clip, you see. We're going to watch a clip. Anyone watch QI? We're going to watch a clip from QI. And Dorothy found this for us, so thank you very much. And we're going to watch a clip, and then we'll have a look and talk about that. Okay.
The feeding of the 5,000, like there's 5,000 people and there went some bread and fish. I reckon that was just about 4,500 people going, what have we got, bread and fish? I'm all right, thanks. I'll have something when I get home.
It's also the other interesting thing about that story is that out of the 5,000 people, only two of them had thought to bring any food.
Yes.
And so in a way, it's, okay, good miracle, but the other side of it is 4,998 idiots. no sense of foresight at all, and Jesus doesn't make them learn a lesson from that. It's all fine.
You say, this is a sermon on the mount. This isn't Glastonbury, you could have said, couldn't you?
But you know, you used to say, you didn't bring any food? Of course there's not going to be any food. Think about it.
Yeah.
Plan next time. Judea would be better if people planned. But no, it always works out fine. Jesus will magic up some grub. He's going to get crucified one day, and then what are you going to eat?
Yes.
I like you, I found that quite funny. But, on another level, is that what society really thinks about Jesus? Do they actually think, well, it's just a story, it doesn't make any difference to us, it's not going to affect our lives? Is that what they really think? I've heard people say that when Jesus walked on water, I've heard a theory that there were shallows, there were hidden stones under the water. Jesus walked on them, so it didn't really happen. The feeding of the 5,000 was written years after the event. And the solutions that society come up with also cause their own problems. If we look at the actual text, it's clear that it was a miracle. It tells us that far more than 5,000 were fed with loaves and fishes. Like I said before, 5,000 is only men. So there was probably just as many women and children as well. Everybody was eventually fed and there was food left over. Alec had a reading for us about the food that was left over. And it was a miracle. The actions that Jesus did were against what we would call science. But that's because Jesus was supernatural. Not in the terms that we think sometimes supernatural, like the films that we watch, but his nature was from God. And therefore he had the ability to change that nature to what he wanted it to be. We think that we're more intelligent these days and more scientific. We meet people that are sceptical. We meet people that doubt. There's doubting Thomases everywhere that we go. And how do we approach that? How do we show people that we don't doubt? Or do we? Is doubt part of your faith? People have said that without doubt, you can't have faith, because without the one, you're not going to have the other. What do you do with your doubt? Jesus referred to himself as the Son of Man, and he taught with authority. He fed 5,000, walked on water, raised the dead. God gave Jesus all the power and the authority, and he allowed Jesus to be his representative, his ambassador on earth. And then he left the Holy Spirit so that we could become ambassadors for God as well. I've said before that I do like that term, ambassador, because it means that we're part of another kingdom, we belong to another country, and yet we're in this one at this moment in time. Just to close, it's 11:24, Dorothy. Just to close, just wanted to tell you a little story, and you can draw the conclusion from it. Very often, I think preachers stand here and they tell you things and then they explain them to you. And I'm sat there thinking, I don't need you to explain it. I've got the analogy. I understand it. So I'm not going to explain it. I'm just going to tell you the story. A friend of mine called Dave, believe it or not, he's a golfer and I play golf with him. And his wife's a Catholic and she goes to a Catholic church. And Dave was saying that they were both sat in the pub during the World Cup. And they were watching the World Cup match. They were watching, can't remember which one it was. England didn't win, I know that much. But they were watching England play somebody. I think it was Italy. But they definitely didn't win. And he said there was this guy sat almost right in front of the television watching the England match. And as they were playing, He was just shouting and screaming at the telly, and he was saying, "Oh, you don't want to do that. You should have passed it to the left wing. Oh, go, run now. Go up the wing. Cross it. Head it in. Come on, you're not playing." And he was saying things like, "Oh, I could do so much better than you, so much better." And he was saying what the manager should be doing and all sorts of things. And at half time, they happened to go to the bar at the same time. And Dave said to this bloke, "Did you used to play football?" And this bloke went, "Oh, no, never played football in my life. Never played football in my life." And Dave went, "Well, you seem to know a lot about it." And he said, "Oh, no, I don't know a lot about it, but I know a lot more than they do. I could have won that first half because I'd have known exactly what to do and how to play it, and I'd have known everything about it." And then he went back to his seat for the second half and started shouting again and telling them what they should do, but not getting involved in it at all on an active level. But he knew what everybody else should be doing. You can use that analogy as you like. I know how I want to use it in the church, but you form your own analogy from it. Amen.